following is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Thursday edition of The Drive. And what an amazing day, weather-wise, it is. It was 80 degrees just a few minutes ago when I was heading here. I mean, it is February, right? It's February the 19th, and it's 80 degrees outside. The sun's shining.
Well, and it was single digit not all that long ago, too. I mean, earlier this month. I mean,
week and a half ago, and in 3 or 4 days we're going to be sub freezing again.
Yeah, like I think. Not unlike the wild swings that we saw
in basketball
last night.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've seen some really
the roller
really...
coaster of the weather, the roller coaster of Auburn basketball.
That's exactly in one game. That's exactly what if you pull up the ESPN if you pull up the win probability chart on ESPN
ESPN. I didn't look at it last night.
If you look at it, it is a roller coaster. It is you're up. And then you're
down,
and then you're way down.
Auburn wasn't up until late. I mean, it wasn't looking good. I mean,
I guess if you're
Auburn
state,
was the favorite.
If you're state, you're down to start the game, and then you're just because you're
an underdog.
Yes,
heading
and then you're up
but
for
minutes into the game. You're up.
You're
and
way
then
up.
You're more up, and you're up and up and up and up and up.
No,
and
you're up, up and away with Hubbard, right? And then
That is impressive. That's as impressive a half of by an SEC basketball player that I have seen in decades. I mean, I have to go back. I go back to the days of Dominique Wilkins and
the shots he was making. I'm going back in the chart of if you'd asked me this time yesterday, the best game I've ever seen someone play against Auburn. Right, I'd be sort of cycling through.
I think this is it in modern basketball.
Ferg mentioned Connect 2 years ago was crazy and was hitting everything.
He didn't
for
have
Tennessee.
35 and a half.
He didn't have 35
and a half. You'd have to go back to the days of
Maravich had 55.
John,
right? That's the record.
John Drew, Pete Maravich. Yeah. guys back in the 70s.
I mean, I saw
would
Marcus
be the last time.
We were at the game when Marcus Thornton had 40 and felt like he just couldn't miss for LSU and had the game winner, had the buzzer beater during the Lebo years.
Turned out that even after a slow second half, Josh Hubbard still had the game-winning shot last night. His only three in the second half was the dagger. I mean,
so back to the chart. You're up. You're way up. Auburn fights back and outplays. I mean, there's a 33
amazing run by
33-16 run. I think to start the second half, and suddenly a game that feels over is within reach, and then not just within reach.
No, you're up seven at the under four timeout.
You hit a couple of timely shots. You get a couple of stops, and a game that felt over is a game where Auburn's up seven,
and that feels like the way that had gone. There was no way at that point. I mean, I didn't think Auburn was going to come all the way back when they were down 16, because it didn't look like they had an answer on how to stop Josh Hubbard. I mean, early on they let him be open, and he got hot. And once he was hot, it didn't matter who was coming at him. They were closing. I thought they were closing things out much better toward the end of the half, but he was hitting just ridiculous shots.
Oh, the shot making on display from Auburn
was fabulous. But when Auburn was up seven, when they came all the way back and were up seven at the under four timeout, that one felt like about as sure a thing as possible, because you're thinking Mississippi State's got to be broken. I mean, to have seen an 18-point lead – turn into a 7-point deficit.
And Auburn was on, I think a 9-0 run at that point. Like State wasn't just seeing.
Yeah, because it was tied at 71. State scored, I think, to make it 73-71, and Auburn did score the next nine.
It was the ultimate reversal in that not only was Auburn seeing the shots that hadn't gone in the whole game suddenly start to drop. You know, that's the Kevin Overton three, the Tahad, like the points that get you ahead and, you know, get you that 7-point lead. State was suddenly ice cold with everything that had worked all game long.
The first 16 minutes of the second half, they really struggled. They only scored 24 points in the first 16 minutes of the second half, and then they get 18 in the last three and a half. And
does Hubbard have a basket in that stretch that you're talking about, the 16 minutes? Maybe he has one?
I'm trying to remember if his layup came. His layup may have come as they were making the – I think the layup came in the last 4 minutes because I think all he had then was free throws. He had four free throws, I know, at around the 6 or 7 minute mark. Maybe he got a bucket, but he may have gotten a bucket when it was – back and forth in the upper 60s to low 70s.
Hubbard's first field goal of the second half was the layup to tie the game with a minute 11.
Oh, okay. So he did not have a basket in the second half until the final a minute 11, and he has that the layup and the three.
Had some field goal, had some free throws, had some assists, but does not score a field goal in the second half until he ties the game at 82 with a minute 11 left, and then the next State possession, right? Because Auburn goes up 83-82, and State goes down, and Hubbard hits the game winner with 44 seconds left, and that's that.
Yeah, so, I mean, just one of the – and Stephen Pearl said it after the game, that's the worst loss that he's been associated with at Auburn. And it was definitely, there's no question, the worst loss that Auburn has suffered this year by far.
I think because winning after being down 18 would have been so, would have felt so monumental to this team. If they'd been able to hold on after taking that lead, the accomplishment of facing down that offensive performance by Josh Hubbard and facing down that road crowd Chris Jans had gone to he'd gone to Frat Row.
Still wasn't a packed house.
Didn't seem like a packed house. Well, they've won two SEC games now, three SEC games
at home
since but also three since January 10th.
Yeah,
right. So, but two in a row. So I mean, it's
and they now have the tiebreaker over Auburn for the 11th spot. Auburn's in danger of falling to a. Having to play on the first day of the SEC tournament now.
Yeah, Auburn's, they have to win the play-in tournament to get to the SEC tournament. Let alone the NCAA's, because we were saying that this is a game that will put you squarely on the bubble if you lose it, and now that's exactly I think where Auburn. I think if you came out with a bracket projection today that had Auburn in the play-in game, I wouldn't be all that surprised if you came out with a bracket projection today that had Auburn out of the tournament.
No,
I wouldn't be.
No, 14
all
and
that
12
surprised.
Now,
close,
I mean,
close, but out of the tournament would be understandable too, despite Auburn's despite the wins on Auburn's resume, and that's the cost of losing games like this. And Bill, you've watched a lot of Auburn teams. Like, what strikes you as the biggest problems in what's gone wrong during this losing streak, but all season long?
There are two or three things. This team has a terrible time trying to close things out. Boy, does that seem like a familiar topic? We went through it all football season.
The
ability to
watching the other team
win ball games when the game's on the line down the stretch.
Yeah, watching the other team win the fourth quarter.
Yes,
in basically every SEC game.
And in basketball, that the under four from the under four to the end of the ball game has not been kind to the Tigers.
Now, how much of that do you think is you're trying to do this with seven?
Oh, I think a good that's a good portion of like, that. There's a strong. I would say yes, you have to consider that strongly, that you are playing with a shorter bench than you're used to. Now you're not playing that much shorter though than Arkansas was the other night. I mean,
and that's not attempting to give anyone a pass,
no.
Right? Because Stevens got to win no matter what kind of choices he makes with who to play or who not to play. And I would say an Auburn team that misses the tournament, there will be pressure on Steven not to miss the tournament in his first two seasons.
Well, you're absolutely right about that.
There will be considerable pressure on Steven not to miss the tournament 2 years in a row if this year's edition of Auburn can't make it to the NCAAs. For Auburn, the thought that you're trying to do this with seven, all the problems in conference play haven't been fatigue. And Auburn's had slow starts, and you can't blame fatigue on a slow start, right? Couple games in a row now during this losing streak. Vanderbilt got out to a crazy fast start.
Oh, yes.
Mississippi State was up. They were up 20, right? Tennessee was up 18 in the second half. Like, there are these in the first half. Tennessee was up 16 in the late in the first half. And so Auburn finds themselves in these big early deficits. And that it's critical to avoid that because trying to rally and trying to win the game
the effort that's extended and expended, and that's one thing Sonny Smith used to talk about, when you're down and you fight all that way back and you get there, even if you take a lead, the amount of energy that is expended and you have to use to get there takes a big toll. And when you're playing with a shorter bench, yes, that can be a huge, huge factor. So,
and it felt like Auburn, at the end of the game when Auburn needed baskets, they didn't have, like, they were out of gas. It felt like that was what was going on in the final minute. After that remarkable performance in the second half to get the lead and to get in position where you could win the game. And so, what about defense, Bill?
That's a great question, Dan. What about defense?
What about defense?
Wouldn't
that be one of the things
it is going to be statistically the worst Auburn defense maybe since pre Bruce Pearl. Mississippi State's only scored 90 points three times this year, and one of those was against Alabama State. That's not a prolific offense. Last Mississippi State came in 14th in the SEC in 3-point shooting percentage, and they hit 16 of 30 last night.
How many? And it feels like, especially during this losing streak, it's not even about how many threes the other team is hitting. It's not about how many threes they're hitting. It's how many open ones they're attempting.
And with guys
who are pretty good 3-point shooters.
Right. But you know what? A bigger concern to me, and I think I mentioned this to you last night, is the play around the rim. Auburn, they were so fortunate the last few years having Jani Broome and Dylan Cardwell.
You're talking defensive. You're talking rim protection.
Talking defensively, but I'm going to get into offense as well. I mean, on both ends of the court, Auburn is atrocious.
People talked about last year's team finishing around the rim offensively at times with Dylan would throw it down, but for some of those guys, when you got into really physical games, that was something of a weakness. And there was the belief that Steven had addressed, or that Bruce and Steven had addressed it in the offseason, and this team, this year's team, was going to be substantially better at finishing at the rim. And I don't really feel like you've
Auburn statistically the final book last night, when I haven't looked back at it again today, but Auburn is 5 of 14 on layups last night and 1 of 3 on dunks. Meanwhile, Mississippi State shot 70% on layups last night, and Auburn didn't contest a lot of their layups. Every attempted layup by Auburn was strongly contested, and most of them were blocked last night.
Missing twos is how
it hurts. Yeah. That hurts bad because it's like you've got that. You're right there at the rim, and the ones that weren't blocked that were just missed. I mean, there were some that would just be. I mean, you're right there, point blank, go up and roll the ball off the backside of the rim, and that's I was counting last night. And I was up to 10 points that just felt like, oh, those are gimmies that Auburn didn't have.
And that's something I think Vanderbilt and Alabama stand out as games where we lamented like, okay, that you left points on the floor. Like, you left points on the floor by not finishing the way that you probably needed to. And for Auburn, I think the reason Steven seemed so devastated post-game is because he knew what that win would have meant. And instead, now it's
well,
it's
you know what that loss means.
Yeah,
That is a very painful and damaging loss last night.
And it's the worst loss you've taken of the 12 now this season. It's the only one where you can't look at the other team and say they're in the NCAA tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you want to be suffering those kind of losses for the first. It feels like you're trending in the wrong direction, to put it lightly.
Well, yeah, you've lost five straight, and you've got Kentucky coming in off a loss on their home court on Saturday night.
You've lost five straight, and the fifth loss of the five is to probably the worst team of the group. And so, yeah, this is a red alert. Like this for this season.
Oh yes,
and maybe for Stephen Pearl's tenure, because you don't want to go into next year with no momentum and having cratered in February and missed the tournament. So this is this is a red alert for this season. This Saturday is a chance, look, beating Kentucky, they're a tournament team.
You beat Kentucky, and I think that that makes up for the loss at Mississippi State. You still need to win the other games. You better not lose another ball game before you get to that last one of the season.
You've got Oklahoma, South Carolina, and LSU,
right?
And all three of them. See, I would have said that you could maybe go 3-1 against State. Let's go 4-1. I'd say between State.
Oh, you mean with Kentucky in there?
No. I was going to say between State.
You had four.
The non-tournament teams Auburn
State
has left.
Ole Miss, yes. Oklahoma, and LSU. That's four.
And South Carolina, right? Is there another South Carolina?
No.
Oh, okay. So those four.
You've got those four, and then you have Kentucky and Alabama. Those were your final.
Okay,
six.
Separate Kentucky and Alabama for a second.
So I don't think you could have gone 3-1 and lost to both Kentucky and Alabama. I don't think 3-3.
3-3 is what, 17-14 going to the SEC tournament?
Yeah. I just don't know that 17-14.
I mean, we've seen 17-14 SEC and Big Ten teams get in.
But the SEC's not considered quite as good this year.
But the Auburn schedule is.
I start wondering if you're 4-12 though, and who was the last one you beat?
Florida.
Yeah, okay.
Right? Florida's your
but
last
it's been
quad.
A while. Yeah. So, I mean, it's been a while.
If I'm thinking,
losing like a half dozen straight quad one games.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm thinking
that's
like your
not,
last.
That's not good.
Your last, yeah, I mean, if it's four quad one, if you finish with four quad one wins, we're probably talking, NC State, St. John's, Arkansas, and Florida.
And Florida, that's it.
And the Florida and one Florida was the most
was the last
recent one.
That's been a while.
And it's been a while.
I don't know that that's good because you know, how many times have we heard the committee talk about, you know, recency and what you've done lately.
There's also the thought that would that team then lose in the SEC tournament the first round? Because then you're talking 17-15, and 17-15 with a really bad February.
Yes,
would be a tough sales pitch for the end. So maybe you're right. Maybe you needed to. You could have gone 4-0 against State, Oklahoma, Ole Miss, and LSU. If you go 4-0 against those four teams, you could survive 0-2.
Yes,
against Kentucky and Alabama.
So. Yeah, now, that would have gotten you to 9-9. That would get you to 18-13 and 9-9 in the conference.
Now that you've lost to State, not only do you have to beat all three of the non-tournament teams you have left.
Yeah, I think you also need to beat one of the other.
I think you're absolutely
one of the
right.
Other two teams, one team.
Yeah, you've talked me into it. I'd say that you needed to. Like, you cannot afford a loss to another non-NCAA tournament team, which is Oklahoma, Ole Miss, or LSU. You lose to one of those, you're in dire straits, who you can hear on Wings 94.3 sometimes.
True.
Because you lost to State, you probably need to beat one of these two teams. Home game against Kentucky with some extra rest, coming off a tough home loss to Georgia. I mean, it feels like an opportunity Saturday to bounce back, or it could be
the ball didn't bounce, it just gone flat. I mean, that's the problem. The ball's bounced, bounced outside and been hit by a car.
You've seen a lot of Kentucky games, Bill. If Kentucky comes to Neville on Saturday and wins, is the season going to feel over afterward?
It's hard to imagine that it won't. It really is.
So those are your stakes right there.
Yeah.
You talk about a red alert. Like, this is a game on Saturday that could make the season feel like, you know how we were saying that you can see the bubble from losing a state?
Right.
You can see the end of the season from a Kentucky loss on Saturday.
Yeah. Like, could end a lot sooner than you thought. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Love for you to join in. We're going to check in with Ferg.
Yeah, then we're going to call.
We'll check in with Justin Ferguson, who was at that ball game last night in Starkville. We'll check in with him in just a little while. David Paschal joins us in hour number two. We'd love to hear from you as well, though, here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive. The Drive. With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. 7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill and Dan here on this Thursday afternoon. So we're going to check in with Ferg at the bottom of the hour.
Yeah, I'm going to give Ferguson a call in the next couple of minutes.
All right.
He was there and
witnessed that. It was crazy. I mean, turned into a much more interesting game, in the second half than it appeared in the first half, because I mean Auburn looked like they were just going to be run out of the gym. Down 16, it was 49-33 at the half. Josh Hubbard had outscored Auburn single-handedly. And again, I'd love folks to tell me, have you ever seen a more impressive performance by a player against Auburn, by a basketball player against Auburn? I was trying to think back. I mean, I was not, of course, we weren't there last night, but we were able to watch it. I wasn't able to watch Pistol Pete against Auburn. Believe John Mingell scored around 50 in that same ball game.
Is that the opening of was that the opening of Beard Eves?
Yes,
it was the first night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There haven't been many performances like that. I mean, and what's crazy, he wasn't even the high scorer in the league last night.
Yeah, what a night for the
Unbelievable.
League.
Unbelievable.
Right? I mean, you had that Bama Arkansas was just insane.
Arkansas had a 14-point lead in that one. And but they ran out of players. They had four guys foul out. I mean, that was a big difference. If you saw Cal's post game, yeah, the little look he gave after, he went through all the numbers, didn't go through the he didn't mention the fouls and the free throws, because that was the difference in the ball game. But yes, Acuff, unbelievable last night, and he had a stretch. He had a stretch of about 8 or 9 minutes when he didn't score at all, sort of like Josh Hubbard did. For the first 15 minutes of the second half, but he ends up with 49 last night and in a loss. So that was a 117-115 Alabama.
Connect had 39 in the win over Auburn 2 years ago for Tennessee, and that, I mean, he was he was 12 of 21, 5 of 8 from 3. And 10 of 12 at the free throw line.
Yeah, see, and Hubbard last night, 9 of 12 from 3.
Yeah.
And
I think he hit 10.
Yeah, excuse me, he was 9 of 12 in the first half.
Yeah.
That's right. And he hit his last six, though, but he hit his last six in the first half, and at least three of those were, I mean, with somebody all over him and him off balance. Just the ball touches his hand, and it went up, and it was nothing but the bottom.
The display of shot making from Hubbard was one thing. I do think it's fair to wonder, did Auburn wait too long to adjust defensively to what he was doing?
How can you say anything but yes? I mean, they may have closed out a little bit better on him in the first half, toward the end of the first half, but by that point, he was so confident that he knew that anytime the ball touched his hand, he was going to make that three, and he did. In the second half, Auburn started doubling him, and as the announcers were saying, then they'd face guard him if he gave the ball up, so it made it difficult for him to get the ball back. But yes, I mean, for it to take 20 minutes to, when a guy's pumping in 35 in the first half, shouldn't take, when he had 20, he had He had 20 points right at the 10-minute mark. Right at the 10-minute mark, he had 20 points. You don't make an adjustment then?
And I believe Steven in the postgame, I forget if this was radio or talking to Justin and the other reporters on site, but he even said that you could second guess the decision defensively not to go after Hubbard sooner. I think he also said you can second guess some of the offense in the closing minutes of the game.
Yeah, well, I cringed a little when he said they didn't execute the game plan. Talking with a couple of people today, it's been strongly suggested to me that, well, maybe that's not such a good game plan when things go that way. I mean, because it was, it was just atrocious how open some of the shots were there early. And hey, Auburn's fortunate. I think State got off to like a 2-for-9. They didn't make all their shots the first couple of minutes, and still were able to, score 49 in the first half.
I mean, I would say with Steven, it's like if the plan is good and the execution is the problem, then he's gonna get an
off
season.
You have to adjust the plan.
Well, sure, but he's also gonna get an off season to adjust the players who execute the plan.
I think there definitely will be some adjustment of the players. I just wonder.
And you get one chance to do that, maybe two. See. But
you know, we've been talking about this. I mean, if it's having to adjust double figure players again, it's going to be very difficult to expect your. I mean,
I think it's a hard way to live.
It's a very dangerous.
Bringing in 10 new players, playing fantasy basketball in the transfer portal. And trying to solve your roster problems that way is like, look. Sometimes you buy a lottery ticket and you hit the jackpot. Sometimes, but
right.
But a lot of lottery tickets end up in the garbage.
Most of them, most of them are worthless.
Most of them end up in the garbage.
Most of them are worthless. So I mean, it is.
That's what it feels. It feels like if you're trying to readjust and bring in a bunch of new players from the portal. It does feel a little bit like you're stepping up to the table and seeing what happens.
Let's also say this. I mean, from every indication that I have and people that I know, I don't think it's because Auburn is poor. I mean, I see that from a lot of people. Well, Auburn didn't have the money to get any players. I think people are pretty informed feel like Auburn spent more money than Alabama did this past season roster.
No. Do not blame a lack of resources for this roster.
Well, now, that's what a lot of people are doing that right now.
I would say I could see, like, let me see what next year's roster looks like, and I'll tell you what your roster. Yeah, I'll tell you what your resources, how they rank. But no, you don't retain Tahad, not just from the NBA, but Tahad Pettiford could have gone anywhere.
Yeah.
Like, Tahad Pettiford could have gone anywhere in college basketball, and he's at Auburn. Murph was one of the top returning big men in the SEC.
Yes, he was. Keyshawn Hall was the leading scorer in the Big 12.
I mean, Kevin Overton had suitors.
Yes, he did.
And you initially retained Chad Baker Mazzara, before he reconsidered and decided to go play at USC. Sebastian Williams Adams had big time offers.
Mm-hmm.
I reject the idea that financial restrictions led to this roster. Look, you had so many seniors last year that it made sense for this year's roster to be full of new players. How many seniors do you have in your rotation this year? Two. Okay, so it would be strange if a rotation that had five underclassmen of its seven suddenly had a whole, like, if you go from five of those seven guys can return. If none of them return and you're going with a whole new, like, that doesn't feel like it went according to plan. That feels like suddenly you're off the rails. And so maybe that's what it's going to take. But it would be, you can explain why this year's team is full of new players. If next year's team is full of new players, things did not go according to plan.
No, you're right. And look, I mean, injuries have obviously played a factor in this. I mean, you don't have Emeka Opurim. You don't have, you haven't had Abdul Bashir But I mean, things, you know, quite a few things didn't work out, and that's why you're in the situation that they're in as far as depth. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. We're going to check in with Justin Ferguson. So stick with us here on the Thursday Drive.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. And we're efforting our good friend Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. We will talk to him hopefully here shortly about last night's ball game and the state of Auburn basketball right now. As we've been talking here early on, a very damaging loss last night as far as Auburn's postseason situation. Auburn has been considered, you know, throughout, even through the four-game losing streak, as a team that was still in the NCAA tournament. I saw, I don't remember which one of the projections it was, yesterday morning, as a matter of fact, had Auburn as an 8 seed.
Justin had something going on at 4 o'clock. It may still be ongoing. Okay. So if we don't get in touch with Justin in this segment, we may
maybe
push
it. Maybe we're getting tomorrow.
Or either tomorrow or we pushed hour two.
Yeah, okay.
We'll see what we can do if he's available after we get done with Pascal.
That's true.
Because I think we're recording a podcast later, so I'll be...
Well, why don't we just do that then, yeah. All right? We'll go ahead and we'll just open up the phone lines now. We'd love for you to join in. We'll see if we can check in with Justin at around 5:30, and we'll have David Pascal a little after 5 as well. So we'd love to hear from you. Get your thoughts, your reactions after last night's tough loss. Tigers dropped to 5-8?
See, you know, you mentioned the and I believe that's right. Yeah, 5-8. And state's also 5-8, right?
Yeah, that's right. State's 5-8 as well.
The folks that are looking at this and thinking like, oh, Auburn's got financial problems or something when it comes to recruiting talent. I don't know if I'm ready to buy that. I'm surprised by, maybe I shouldn't be surprised, but the folks that are ready to just say, it's not going to work with Steven.
Oh, no kidding.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like maybe people you talk to are of the opinion like that. You know, this is.
Well, there are a couple of people I talk to that seem to feel that people more important than us may be feeling that way.
I mean, I think Steven's, look, he's going to get more than one season. Like I can't
imagine it being a one and done.
Especially with the circumstances surrounding how he was hired, the fact that he didn't really like if it was a roster he fully constructed, if he'd taken over in April and built this roster and you have a disappointing season, maybe you grade him more harshly than you do when he takes over the week practice starts. Mm-hmm. As far as, you know, and you give him an off season to build a roster before you render a verdict. But I said it earlier, like, I'm, you know, it feels mid, you know, with 2/3 of the way through his first year feels premature for hot seat stuff. I think if he were to, if the team were to miss the tournament this year, there would be immense pressure to make the tournament next year.
I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Like, I don't think you can miss the tournament in your first 2 years taking over
a Final Four, a program that was in the Final Four last year.
Yeah. No, I don't think you, even though practically everyone from the Final Four team moved on,
mm-hmm.
I don't think you can take over a program that had, because it wasn't just one group of players that enjoyed success.
No, I mean, Auburn over
an 8-year run.
Yeah, I was going to say over the last 7 or 8 years, Auburn has been right there as a contender or title winner. I mean, winning regular season or conference tournament championships on a regular basis over that period.
You take over a program that won the way Auburn did the last 8 years and spend your first 2 years not contending for the SEC regular season title and not...
Well, finishing, I mean, because right now there's very, you know, it's very possible that Auburn finishes in the, you know, the bottom third or the bottom quarter of the SEC.
Yeah, you finish in the bottom half of the SEC your first 2 years and you miss the NCAA tournament your first 2 years. Like, you're talking about, you're talking about some very difficult questions being asked about the direction of the program. And the other thing people would ask, I think, quite fairly, is how do you recruit your way out of that?
That's right. And as
some folks are asking that right now.
Absolutely. I've heard that multiple times. Auburn's not listed in the top 100 in recruiting right now. They have one commitment. I mean, it's right now, and surely because of the situation we have with the transfer portal, that's where you're going to have to, you know, rely on impact players. But you're talking about convincing impact players to come into a program that, you know, slid back a little bit this year. And what is coming back for any player to be coming in and joining? That's the situation that you have, and the question is going to have to be answered. So I mean, it's not any easier. There's not an easy solution to that. And you go, oh well, you know, you've got these top 50 players coming in, or you know that you're picking up a proven transfer from a big time school. I mean, we don't know. I mean, that's not to say it won't happen, but the recruiting part of it. It looks like it's not going to be a high school. There's not going to be somebody that can step right in and contribute from high school, it doesn't look like.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, be fair to Steven in the sense that, you know, it's year one, took over after the roster was already constructed. You know, don't overreact, but at some point you're going to have to react if the results aren't where they need to be. And is that during or after year two? I think it depends on the results.
Yeah, I think so, too.
I think it absolutely depends on the results.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar.
James.
Hey, James.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing today?
All right.
Got a quick question, and I know this is sounding negative, but I don't mean to be. And I'm just thinking more with my head than my heart. Let's say Auburn does not make it to the big dance, NCAA. Mm-hmm. Do you think that because of the poor finish and the way the season played out, that they would accept an invitation to the NIT if offered?
That's a really good question.
I'm going to say no. My guess would be, and maybe they would put it up to the players and have a vote.
Right.
My guess would be that, and they did push back the portal window, which could impact a lot of teams. You know, it became trendy to sort of decline non-NCAA tournament postseason bids in men's basketball because you wanted to be able to focus, because they were opening the portal the second weekend of the NCAAs.
Right, during the tournament.
And if you weren't in the tournament, you wanted to be able to focus your resources on building next year's roster. Now the portal doesn't open until the tournament's over. I think it's the Tuesday after the Final Four is when they open the portal of basketball.
Right, it's the day after.
So it's in that case, maybe you will see some teams that otherwise would have declined postseason bids decide to play in the postseason. I get the feeling that still in the SEC and the Big Ten, if you're not in the NCAAs, there's going to be a ton of pressure on trying to focus on next year's team.
I would think the teams that would be more interested in being there are teams that have not had any postseason opportunities over the last few years. It's tough, you know, when you're in a Final Four a year before and you're thinking, you know, what are we going to do? Who's going to be back and things like that about going to the NIT? But I don't know for sure.
Okay. All right. Hey, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Well, James, do you have a stance on this? Do you think the NIT would be beneficial potentially?
I tell you, my opinion would be, you know, I'm kind of on a fence. I think the players, if the season plays out like it's been going, I think I honestly feel you're going to see some players hit the portal. I really do, and I think that they have just basically had enough. You know, like you said, going from a Final Four type team to the basement, for lack of a better word to describe it, I think they would have said, hey, we've had enough. Let's just call it a day and try to regroup for next year.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all at that, James.
No, I don't think so. And even though the fans, I don't know if the fans would want it.
No, I don't either.
I mean, this is a question. How many teams have been in the Final Four the prior year and then don't even make the big dance the following year?
I saw that question a week or so ago, and I believe there have been like four teams over the last two decades.
Interesting.
That's all that
I know.
It's only happened it's infrequent that a team makes the Final Four and doesn't even make the tournament the next year.
I know Florida, the year after the back-to-back championships, missed the NCAA tournament completely. Mm-hmm. And that's an instance that feels comparable because they went from having a group of guys they went from having the best team in the conference 2 years in a row with six or seven players that played together to all of those guys leaving at once and trying to pick up the pieces the next day. That feels like – I mean, look, missing the NCAA tournament completely would be disappointing for a team that was expected to be top half of the league. When you describe a player who might want to leave because – they experienced the highs and the lows. It's really only Tahad, right? Tahad's the guy that was on the
final. That's right.
He's the one who was on the Final Four team and may decide for a third year of college basketball he wants to go do something else. The rest of these guys, maybe to Stephen's benefit, are guys that are new to all of this and you know, you maybe think could be building blocks, whether it's Jovich, whether it's Williams Adams. Who had a tough night last night,
but is usually
like Sway's plus minus is usually one of the secret like pieces of good news on the Auburn box score. Was not the case last night. But guys like Sway and Jovich, Freeman, right? Like you know could be rotation pieces next year.
Yeah. Hey, I have one more question for you. This a buddy of mine talked about this, but here we go. Let's say the Heat gets turned up on Stephen Pearl. How do you think Bruce Pearl would react since he's been basically, you know, nominated or stated as being an ambassador for Auburn? Think about the situation right there.
I would say that's not – you don't want that to be front of mind when you're making decisions about the direction of the program, but it's probably worth considering. And it's probably a reason not to rush to judgment with Stephen. Like if you weren't ready to give him 2 years to at least to figure out what he's doing.
If you didn't want to do that, you should have just named him interim head coach.
And maybe shouldn't have given him the job in the first place. Like if you're not prepared to give him more than a year, then maybe you don't give him the job in the first place. But that's I have to imagine if Stephen were treated unfairly, I have a feeling Bruce Pearl would have an opinion about it.
Yeah, you think? I think we would know it.
And would say that opinion into a camera or a microphone.
Yeah. Okay. Look, guys, as always, enjoy the show. Thank you very
much. Great hearing from you, James. All right, we'll get to our final break of hour number one. Yeah, I agree there.
We do have Pascal at 5 and Ferg at 5:30.
All right, good deal. So I got plenty to go here on the Thursday Drive. Stick with us.
This is Coach Stephen Pearl, and you're listening to The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan.
Final couple of minutes of hour number one of the Thursday Drive.
Dirty work.
That is a good one. That'd be great. Yeah, it'd be great for cleaners with different all kinds of cleanup people. Couple of goals for U.S. Women today.
Ooh,
the U.S. women win the gold in hockey in overtime over Canada. And Alyssa Liu claims a gold in women's figure skating today. So congratulations there. If you watch any of the Olympics.
I've been watching periodically. I know that there's some big hockey still to come. We were talking the figure skating and
my wife really loves the figure skating.
Well, everything. I mean, even the speed skating, like everything going on the ice is just remarkable because you have to remember they're on skates doing all of this.
Yeah, some of the stuff they do is ridiculous.
And then the ski jumps, like just the most dangerous seeming. Like some of the, you know, super G and you get into
double
the
flips landing backwards.
What? I mean, whatever. Yeah. It's thrilling, the Winter Olympics. Some stuff you rarely see until
you're right. That's about the only time I see those.
And I like the biathlon, right? The shooter, skiing and shooting.
Ski, shoot, sometimes standing, sometimes prone. It's like, yeah.
The two important sports.
Yeah. Great when you combine those. I mean, you know, I've given them suggestions how they could combine other things, but they haven't taken them yet. All right, we're halfway done here on the Thursday Drive. David Pascal joins us, in hour number two when we come back, and then we'll talk with Justin Ferguson a little later on. So stick with us for hour number two of the Thursday Drive.
Auburn IT delivers professional IT support to businesses.
The sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Thursday Drive. Hope everybody doing well on what has been an amazingly balmy Thursday. Temperatures touching 80 degrees today here in Auburn. It's just unbelievable. And the sun, sunshine, after last night's debacle in Starkville, the sun did come up today and it was a really nice day. But I'm sure it's not so nice for Auburn basketball, players, coaches, fans, because that was a very more than just a disappointing loss. That was a game that Auburn should have won, and then after appearing to dig themselves into a hole they couldn't get out of, looked like they had the game with 4 minutes to go, only to see Mississippi State score almost as many points in the last 4 minutes as they did in the first 16 minutes of the second half.
I feel like the Music Man, Bill, because you got Trouble with a capital T.
Yeah, you're right about that.
That rhymes with B. That stands for bubble, right? I mean, that's where Auburn is right now.
I believe it. Yep, 14-12 now.
But the
worst loss of the season, and Stephen Pearl said the worst loss he's been associated with at all.
The only loss to a team that's not currently projected as an NCAA tournament team.
That's
even,
right.
Even Georgia and A&M, which were your worst losses before that, those are still teams that are on the right side of the cut line for the NCAA tournament. Now for Auburn, we were thinking you've got four games left against non-tournament teams. Going into last night.
You have three.
Yeah, but going into last night, you had four.
Yep.
And you could maybe afford to lose one of them, but it would turn Alabama or Kentucky, one of those two.
Yeah, you'd need to win one of those. And now Auburn does. Auburn needs to win one of those to get back in.
And you can't lose one of those other three.
No. No, and they've got Kentucky coming in Saturday night. All right.
You go to Oklahoma right after that.
Yep, an Oklahoma team that is playing much better basketball lately.
You've got like your season is on the line.
It's on the brink.
These next 2 weeks. I mean, I asked you earlier, and it's like we're not. It's not hyperbole here. Like I asked you, like if Auburn loses at home Saturday to Kentucky, is it going to feel over afterward? I think
it's
a lot
of hard not to.
For a lot of
it's
people,
be really hard not
yes.
to. If Auburn is at that point 14-13. 5-9 in the conference.
Fourth home conference loss.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. A&M, Vandy, Bama, Kentucky.
And Kentucky would be, yes. All right. It's hour number two of the Thursday Drive, and that means we're pleased to be joined, as we are each week here on The Drive, by David Pascal from the Chattanooga Times Free Press, who just wrapped up his show on WGOW there in Chattanooga. David, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. I was just listening to y'all, and Auburn has now firmly placed itself as one of the biggest conversation talking points in the entire country with a record that is what it is, but a strength of schedule. And you look at some of their accomplishments. I mean, a double-digit win over St. John's, a double-digit win over NC State, a 22-point win over Arkansas, and a 9-point win over Florida in Gainesville. I mean, those are some resume slam dunks, Yeah, what do you do with a team that's going to be that is trending toward being 500 overall and way under 500 in its league? I was looking at some, they're still like 34th in the KenPom, which is a very healthy rating. And I guess Lenardi will come out with his latest tomorrow, but they were an 8 seed at the beginning of the week,
right.
and Jerry Palm in his bracket doesn't even have Auburn in there because he kind of projects what's going to happen, and he thinks Auburn will keep sliding its way right out of the tournament.
Well, that's one of the things we were talking about earlier today, David, is how many times have we heard about how a team has done down the stretch, and looking, yes, at those four big quad one wins that Auburn has, but if they don't beat Kentucky or Alabama, the last one would come against Florida, and Auburn would have lost its last six or seven quad one games. And you have that kind of, it's not even a limp. I mean, really slide at the finish. It's going to, I think, make it even more difficult to try to get in.
Yeah, and y'all were right, because, I mean, last night changes the narrative, because even before last night, to y'all's point, every loss was a very respectable loss to a team that looks like it's going to be in there. And even when you saw, the different metrics of ranking the SEC teams by their seeding out of the 10 SEC teams projected to get in there, Auburn was like seventh, going into last night. But now that changed. When you think about a Kentucky team coming in, and I know Kentucky had an awful, awful performance at Vanderbilt, but most of the time on the road this year in league play, it's been pretty impressive. I mean, they gave Florida a good fight last week. They've won in Knoxville, and they've won in Fayetteville. So the road deal with Kentucky has not been an issue at all.
No, you're right about that. So, I mean, this is a I said it before last night's game. I said, you're expected to win, so you've got to win that game, so it makes it a must-win game. Saturday night feels like it is just to try to stop the bleeding. I mean, if you have a six-game losing streak and you're headed to Oklahoma, who's played better lately, hey, teams like that are chomping at the bit. They're going, hey, we've got an opportunity to get a win and may not get into the big dance, but they could get into the NIT. And we had a caller ask, well, if Auburn doesn't make the NCAA tournament, do you think they'll take an NIT bid? And I just don't know if that would be the case, David.
Yeah, I don't know if they would either. And if Auburn slides out of this thing, you're going to have one of the more interesting storylines with, and we all know how it's played out. And this is where I'm just like, some people rank coaches based on national championships and stuff like that. Mm. Bruce Pearl is living proof that you don't have to win a national championship to be considered one of the truly elite coaches of our generation. When you think about what he did at Tennessee, mm-hmm. and then to take over a program like Auburn that was in the middle of what became a 14 or 15 year streak of not making the NCAA tournament and winning three SEC titles and two NCAA Final Four trips. I mean, it's incredible what he's done, but we all know how it played out right before the start of the season. He turns things over, and all of a sudden, what happens if he doesn't make it this year and they don't make it next year? I mean, do they make a change? And if that happens, does Bruce pick up and leave Auburn? And is he no longer an Auburn ambassador? I mean, this dynamic could really, really get strange.
Yeah, we had a caller ask about that in the last hour, David, the idea of, where does that – if Steven were to find himself on the hot seat, where, how do you weigh Bruce in all of this and how much that, his impact at Auburn. I don't think you can let the wrong guy stay in charge because you're worried about stuff like that. But I think you need to be fair to Steven. And that would be, I think rushing to judgment this year would probably be unfair. Year two, suddenly you got a sample size, suddenly you got a resume, and for you think about how much Auburn was winning the last 8 years. This year's team misses the tournament. There's immense pressure to right the ship, and I think right the ship in year two.
Yes, and something else to think about is it is so much different than just a few years ago, where you can't count on, well, look at the guys that we have now and what they will be in a year or two, because you can't count on having anyone beyond the current season that you're in. So that's it's going to be a challenge. And right now, Auburn's nowhere to be seen on the list of top recruiting schools either. So it's going to have to come from the transfer portal, however many players they have to replace.
And then you run the risk of just, of you know, bringing in someone. And I know he's had some – he's had issues with multiple players this year. And it's just not and to Steven, you know, Steven's very transparent on stuff like that. Mm-hmm. He airs out the laundry and lets you know that if somebody's late for a team meeting, that's why I didn't start. Or if, you know, and if disciplinary reasons causes someone to sit out a game altogether, like Keyshawn Hall. So, yeah, it has become, and when you think about the SEC, I mean, it is obviously more cutthroat than ever in men's hoops. And you've got a handful of programs like Alabama, Arkansas, Tennessee, Florida, Kentucky. I mean, those programs are invested. Those programs aren't going anywhere. And so
I don't think Texas is planning on giving it up either. I mean, and don't look now. Sean Miller's got them playing better.
Right, and you saw where Texas was ranked number 2 on that field of 68, where they had the coaches rank the league in terms of best jobs. And, I mean, you talk about mm-hmm. the ultimate testament to Bruce Pearl, because you could argue back in the day when Auburn was playing at Beard Eves, and even when the new arena got built, you could argue that when the league had 12 or maybe 14 teams, I mean, there were stretches there where it looked like Auburn may have been the worst job in the league. And then Bruce Pearl gets it up to what they were. Auburn was like 9th on that poll. And so, I mean, it is an attractive job with an attractive arena and a rabid fan base. But how much does that fan base erode if they don't make it? I mean, that's what amazed me about Auburn, is just the fans couldn't get tickets to games at Neville. And so they'd go watch them elsewhere. I mean, I saw Auburn play at Vandy about 3 or 4 years ago, where Auburn had the entire upper levels of Memorial Gym and had more fans than Vanderbilt had. So, I mean, I don't know what it's obviously a declining year. It was going to be. There's no way they were going to be the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament again. But is it a decline or is it a crash and burn? Because it becomes unbelievable if Auburn plays its way out of the NCAA tournament altogether.
Yeah, I don't think those fans. I think a big part of it, as much as they love Auburn, and you even saw fans in Starkville last night. You know, the camera would cut mm-hmm. to packs of Auburn fans in different parts of the arena. But if these fans don't think they're watching a team that has a chance to win, like if they you know, it's not the Auburn of it all is not going to be enough. Right, and so for Steven, and I guess something that's going to be a challenge for Steven is Bruce was so adept at using the portal and finding guys that fit him and finding some of them at a bargain. You know, mm-hmm. finding guys from the mid-major ranks like Jani Broome that could step in and immediately have a huge impact on his team. You know, they recruited from junior colleges. They recruited from...
I mean, you look at Denver and Cheney and all those guys. I mean, and Chad that just came from all over.
Sure.
They weren't from the big schools and they weren't the big names in the portal.
And I think there's going to be some pressure on Steven to find if this season continues on the trajectory it's on right now, there's going to be pressure on Steven to find guys that could fix this. And he, you know, some important at-bats in the offseason, this offseason, as far as figuring out who needs to be on next year's team, because I wonder if things were to continue, you wonder how many off seasons he's gonna get to fix this sort of thing before things get uncomfortable.
Yeah, I can't see it. If it's a true crash and burn disaster, I can't see it going beyond 2 years. And you know, in addition to players, I mean, you've got to get some kind of defensive help too, because I mean that's where this team just
atrocious.
Can be just shocking at times. I mean, watching the first half of that game last night was unbelievable. I know Josh Hubbard's a special player, don't get me wrong, but my goodness, that was and you're seeing all these teams just light Auburn up on the scoreboard. So I mean, that's obviously something that Bruce was so good. I mean, Auburn, for all the success Auburn has, a lot of times the defense didn't get the respect it deserved, but Auburn could be downright nasty on defense under Bruce sometimes, which really added to that success.
Yeah, and what has, you know, really perplexed a lot of people is Steven was his defensive coordinator, but it has mm-hmm. been it has been completely a 180 from that, because Auburn's offense, still by all metrics, Auburn's offense is plenty good enough. This team,
right.
I mean, offensively, you look at some of these numbers and you'd think, oh, this team's going to be a whole lot better than 5-8 in the league because of the numbers they put up. But they continually are giving up you know, 80 plus 90. I mean, Mississippi State had only scored 90 points twice this year, and one of those had been against Alabama State heading into last night.
I still think because of what they did in the non-conference, if Auburn, even if they get to 8-10 in the league, and even if they lose, if they go 8-10 in the league and they lose their SEC tournament game, I think they're in.
At 17-15?
It may be they have to do a play-in, but I don't even know if they have to do a play-in. I think the resume and that strength of schedule is so strong that 8-10 and a first-round loss would get them in, but asking them to be 8-10 now is asking them to go 3-2.
That's right. It's going to be a lot tougher than we thought.
Texas got to the play-in game last year at 6-12 in the SEC.
In a year though that was everyone knew the SEC right. was the best it had ever been.
And they were 19-16 overall, and that's after the loss. So they were 19-15. When they made the first four,
mm-hmm.
So I mean that's Auburn probably has a comparable resume to I know the overall numbers wouldn't be bad, but Auburn probably has better wins.
I'm sure they do than Texas did a year ago.
So I'd say that's like and that was they, the Auburn Texas was 13th in the SEC in the standings at 6-12 and still. And still got in. I would think
12th right now.
Yeah,
at least as far as the seeding for the tournament.
You know what? I'd say Dayton could absolutely be in play in the scenario you're outlining, too, Davey. You could be talking about.
I think Auburn would take it right now.
Could be talking about the first four. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, and it's interesting because Auburn had that team about the years run together, but it was maybe 3 years ago where they had Wendell Green and KD Johnson. Their perimeter play was lacking that year. It may have been Broome's first year there. Where that was a team that just did not play the schedule that this team did, so it didn't have the non-conference marquee wins that this team did, but it had a better SEC record. I'm not sure if the SEC was as strong, but, you know, I want to say it was like the next to last weekend of the regular season where Auburn beat Tennessee down there, and that was kind of their marquee win that clinched things, that kind of got them off the bubble. And I want to say that was an 8-9 team that won that beat Iowa and then lost to Houston mm-hmm. or whatever. And so it's weird because this year's team's resume outside the league is so much stronger, like I said, with the wins over St. John's and NC State. But because that league record is taking a hit, it's getting dicey.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting here down the stretch. Florida looks to be in great shape after that Alabama win over Arkansas last night. Gators with a two-game lead with 5 games to play. So, but there are so many teams, man. The 9-4 and 8-5 teams. It's just crazy to see that many teams that are you know battling to try to get there. I would say sure, the Tennessee, Alabama, and Vandy and Arkansas still have a shot at winning. It's going to be difficult, though. But, I mean, what a heck of a race it is coming down the stretch.
Yeah, and you think about just the – it's so – this is just going to be – when you think about Texas A&M really pulled one out mm-hmm. last night because Ole Miss led them double digits for a little bit. But when you think about Texas A&M, Missouri, because their non-conference was so low – Georgia and Auburn, I mean, you really do have a group of about 5 teams that are still kind of in that bubble, you know, bubble area. And it's kind of a trade-off because you're just like, well, Auburn still has Kentucky and Georgia to go, but Kentucky went in a couple of nights ago in Rupp. You know, if Auburn could win that rematch game, that looks like a better win now, even though it's a wash because they also play Kentucky, but... Yeah, no, it's a fun deal. It's not last year there were just so many teams that you knew were already in. I mean, it just seemed like at this time last year you're like, hey, even though it was historic, you were just like, hey, there are 14 teams that look like they're mm-hmm. on the right side of this, everybody but LSU and South Carolina.
Yeah, it is definitely different
and
this year.
One thing, Bill, about South Carolina and Dan, I mean, I saw them Saturday night. That's a team that's not giving up. I mean, you know, they've with Thomas out for the year, that stinks. But McKinnon came back last night or 2 nights ago, whenever they played Texas close, and that freshman point guard, they only had 3 turnovers in Knoxville the other night. So that's a team that's still fighting. So, you know, Auburn can't fall asleep on that one. They can't fall behind 18-6 in that one.
No, you're absolutely right. So, I mean, every game really, really important for Stephen Pearl and Auburn as they head down the stretch. David, it's always great when we get to spend a little bit of time with you. Let everybody know how they can keep up with everything that you have going.
Sure. TimesFreePress.com for the articles and WGOW.com for Sport Talk, which is 2 to 5 each weekday central.
All right, David. Thanks a lot. Really appreciate your time and hope you have a great weekend.
You guys have a great weekend as well.
All right, we will. David Pascal joining us from Chattanooga, as he does on Thursdays. We'll get to our first break of hour number two. A few minutes where you get a chance to give us a call before we check in with Justin Ferguson here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. 24 minutes after 5 o'clock. Bill and Dan here in the studio, and let's get back to the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, and Jeff is up next. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
All right.
Good. Kind of a somber Thursday, I'm sure, in respect to last night. I haven't heard much of the conversation today. I pretty much basically know what it's about. But anyway, in respect for this team, I believe the lack of slow start is based on focus, that this team doesn't work very hard in practice. I know, go back to my high school days, that seems to be the area that our coach would focus on. When you have slow start, that means you're not working hard in practice. It means you're not come out mentally ready to play. And somewhere on the coaching staff, someone is failing that. And too much energy is being exerted trying to come back. And that loss was a backbreaker last night in more ways than one.
Well, you're
that
right.
Could have re-jump started this season, those last 3 minutes, to give that lead up. I think that set the tone for the rest of this season, I'm sadly to say.
You know, Jeff, the only part of that, like, I'm not sure how you fix the slow starts at the beginning, but I think you're absolutely right that Auburn has been, you know, they've been putting themselves behind the eight ball early.
Game then, after game, it then, seems like.
And, yes. then having to expend energy to try to dig their way out of it.
Well, that's a focus. You know, that's because you have to see that from a coaching perspective. That means you're not working their butts in practice. You know, you cannot take it easy. You see where your game is lost in your first 7-8 minutes of the game. That's where we're losing these ball games at. And focus means you're not working hard. That means, well, we could just go out and win. You know, at some point we'll turn it on. No, it doesn't work that way. You turn it on from practice to the tip of that ball. That's when you're turning it on. So somewhere along the line, this team has lost their focus. And I don't know how to get it back.
Well, you know,
I'm sad to say.
I was going to say it's sort of along the lines of, you know, Stephen Pearl talking, you know, I guess it was 2 or 3 weeks ago, about teams shooting such, you know, he was asked about the three-point defense because Auburn's at the bottom, and I mean they are solidly at the bottom of the league in three-point defense. And, you know, he said, you know, after a while, you have to realize it's not just bad luck or coincidence that the other team is shooting that well. You've got to figure out why and do something about it. Doesn't appear really that they've been able to get that done yet. But I think the same thing applies to the slow start. Something needs to change about whatever is going on at the beginning of ball games, because Auburn either looks lethargic or like they're really not sure exactly what's going on at the outset of ball games and finding themselves in a hole.
Well, absolutely. As I said, Bill, you know, I mean, we could say not getting a good scouting report, But even if you get a good scouting report, you still got to execute the scouting report. Mm-hmm. So you still got to have a mindset of whatever the scouting report is. And that's lack of motivation. That's clearly that's what we see. I see.
Well, you know, last night it sort of looked like what some people were concerned about. You know, how does that four-game losing streak affect the mindset of the players? Because it looked like, you know, they just weren't all there at the beginning of last night.
Well, just like winning becomes a mindset, losing becomes a mindset. You go out expecting to lose.
And Steven said, we appreciate the phone call, Jeff. Great stuff. Steven said, like, it's on him to you know, his job, one of his jobs as head coach is making sure his team's ready to play. And these slow starts would indicate, as Jeff just said, you know, there's a disconnect there between, you know, what they want to do to start the game and what actually happens out there.
And it's really difficult when you get off to slow starts and then you have trouble closing out games. I mean, that's a double-edged sword right there.
Let's get to Spectre before we take our bottom of the hour break and call Justin Ferguson.
Hey, Spectre.
Hey, guys. You know, Jeffrey's right. The slow starts, we recovered from that, and that's a good thing.
But it takes so much to recover from it sometimes.
Huh?
I said it takes so much out of you to have to keep doing that, coming from behind.
I understand, but if we're capable of doing it, it's okay too. But here's what I have a problem with. You got Howard, right? Howard?
Hubbard? You're talking about the guard?
Josh Hubbard. Yeah, he's leading scorer in the game. And in the last couple of minutes of the game is what I don't understand. He's been hot all game long. And, you know, you got other coaches besides Pearl over on that bench. They're not there just to watch the game. They're supposed to be coaching also. And is Pearl also doing the defensive coaching, or has he got a defensive coordinator?
No, he says he is his own defensive coordinator.
Okay, here's the problem. Hubbard, the hottest guy out there, less than 2 minutes left in the game, he's over in the wing by himself. Mm-hmm. Closest guy to him was 15 feet away, and he hits a three like he's been doing all night long. Mm-hmm. Now, that is a problem with having your man out of position.
I think a lot of the three-point defense is about players being out of position. Spectre, I mean, how many of those – they attempt 30 threes last night.
Yeah, they hit 16.
How many of them were open? They hit 16 of them. I mean,
quite a few of them were. Now, they hit some contested threes, but there were way too many that were open.
Yeah,
because they missed a few that were open as well.
Okay. I understand what you're saying, but to leave a man wide open, I mean.
Oh, no, we're agreeing with you, Spectre. We're agreeing with you. There were way too many open threes.
And it sums up, I think, one of the big problems of this losing streak, which, you know, how many times the defense does, you know, they come close to doing enough on these possessions, but then a guy's got the ball alone at the three-point line.
Yeah, one more pass and somebody's wide open. Right.
But anyway, that's what I got to say about that. You know, if we had more defense on just that one guy, if we had who was supposed to be defending him anyway?
I'm not sure who had him right there at the end. I think it was probably Kevin Overton.
They're still trying to figure that out.
But you know, Spectre, there's so many things that just drive you crazy about this. As bad as the defense was against the three, it was bad against the two. It was bad on the inside. I mean, they shoot 70% on layups. Auburn shot 30% on layups. I mean, it's you've got to be able to score when you're around the rim or contest when the other team is trying to score around the rim. You can't have a disadvantage like that and expect you're going to win.
Yeah, I'm going to close with this. Auburn, whether it's football or basketball, how many coordinators have we had that couldn't do the job? I'm talking about taking over
as a head coach. You see it, you know, it's a lot more common. You didn't used to hear about coordinators as much in other sports, but it's not an uncommon thing to have seen, you know, guys who are really good as assistants. But, you know, we'll see. It's Steven's first year, but things definitely need to get better. Great stuff, Spectre. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. We're going to check in with Justin Ferguson, who was in Starkville last night. Get his thoughts when we come back for the final half hour of the Thursday Drive. Welcome back into the Thursday Drive, final 20 minutes or so here on this Thursday with Bill and Dan here in the studio. And it's Thursday, and good to have our good friend Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer joining us here on the Drive hotline. Ferg, how was the trip to Stark Vegas?
Yeah, pretty eventful, I would say, game-wise, but other than that, it was all right.
Yeah, well, the game was it was eventful. You're right about that. I mean, it was the Josh Hubbard show in the especially in the first half. I can't recall the last time I've seen a player go off like that in a half the way that Hubbard did last night. Look, Auburn gave him a couple of open looks early. He took advantage, and once he got hot, it didn't matter. But it's just something that couldn't happen. You knew he's the guy. He's that guy on that team that could do that. And Auburn let him get started, and it was just nothing they could do about it. It didn't seem after that until the second half.
Yeah, no, I mean the shots he hits where it's you got a hand in his face and all that, or he's going, you know, as soon as he catches it, he's shooting over double two. Okay, like, you know. He's going to hit those, but those don't happen in a vacuum, right? Auburn let him get going early and then just never could find a way to get it out of his hands. That's the thing. You see it in the second half when they go more aggressive with the double teams and the denials and stuff like that off the ball. Probably should have done that earlier.
Yeah.
But on top of that, it's just like you can't let that guy get going. He is the only one who's going to do that. And Stephen Pearl said after the game, like, look, we were supposed to be trapping and blitzing ball screens and handoffs and stuff like that, and we weren't doing it. We were not on the same page. Guys weren't communicating. Guys weren't executing what we had talked about. And I think between that and Auburn being too slow to kind of just say, you know what, you know, let him have, like, you can't let a dude hit 9 threes on you in one half. You know, if you're gonna do the double team and deny stuff, do it a lot earlier in this game because he was the only guy who could beat you, and he pretty much did. And then obviously the end of the game, you know, defensive breakdown like they've had you know, this season, especially in those corner threes, it just really came back and got him there. So it's massively disappointing. We know this Auburn defense is not, you know, outside of a three-game stretch, those first three wins they had out of the four in that winning streak, they haven't really played good defense at all in SEC play. And, you know, it's just it's a combination of things. You know, I tweeted this last night. Bill, your question to Stephen Pearl earlier this week about did you find any trends with your three-point defense? And he's like, hey, it's some of everything. Yeah. It's different every game. Yeah, that's the thing. As you know, I think if it was a quick and easy fix for Auburn, if it was one or two things they could improve, they probably would have done it by now. And, you know, a guy like Josh Hubbard, you know, just absolutely scorched him. It's an outlier type of performance from an outlier type of player. But the problem is everybody's doing this against Auburn in the three-point department.
It feels like you're getting a vicious cycle here when you look at Auburn where you fall behind early. You have to really expend a lot of energy in the first 12, 15 minutes of the second half to get yourself back in the game. And then you're in a close game with 4 minutes left.
And do you have anything left?
And you're on fumes, and you might have some key players in foul trouble. And it starts with having played your way into a bad situation early on. You mentioned the defense and the possibility they could have maybe reconsidered some things strategically in how they handled Josh Hubbard once he started making some of those ridiculous shots early on. What's your sense of why the offense has had a couple of really slow starts in this losing streak?
Oh, it ain't just a couple. you go back and look. Last six games, Auburn has been down by double digits in the first half in five of them. Hmm. They have been down by double digits by the midway point of the first half, so the first quarter, if you will.
Yeah.
Four of those times, they are just stuck in the mud early in games on offense where everything just looks really difficult. And I thought last night Auburn really had an issue in half-court offense. You know, Pearl said after the game, play calling wasn't good enough, and staff's got to be better in those situations late. And I would say even early, too. In the second half when Auburn started going on offense, it was a lot of stuff that was happening in transition and a lot of stuff on kind of breakdowns and kind of secondary breaks and stuff like that. It's just you felt like Auburn just did not really have a ton of answers on offense for the majority of this game. And, you know, I think part of it is just you getting off to really slow starts, and it's just, you know, it's just, okay, Keyshawn Hall's going to hit a shot. He's going to take a tough one and hit a few of them and all that. But other than that, you're just not getting a whole lot early in these games. And so you put yourself behind the eight ball early. And then in the second half, okay, you make your adjustments, you make your tweaks, and maybe you can get some better offense out of it. And you're in front of your own bench, and that helps a lot as well, as we know. But I think it's just both on the offensive side and the defensive side last night, I thought Auburn was way too slow, you know, from the staff perspective of making their adjustments and making their tweaks. And, you know, I think you see it come up in a bunch of ways. I thought Auburn was, I mean, there were a couple times in this game where you can go back and watch, and it's just, it seemed like Stephen Pearl was just really not, you know, not on the same page with what they were calling on offense. And it's just, you know, they between that and the lack of execution, it's just, it's kind of some of everything at this point. It's like a perfect storm of problems that can sink you. But yeah, I mean, for Auburn, it's just like, I think, you know, I haven't been one of those guys that has said like, oh, you know, they got to be playing harder, and it's effort and energy. I did think though, last night in the first half, I think you really saw it in the rebounding early in this one. You know, it just felt like Auburn just was not playing with a whole lot of fire until they find themselves down by double digits. And it's like, well, what if you do that from earlier in the game? Now you're in no choice because you put yourself in a position by losing this game that you've got to play every game desperately because you are a bubble team right now.
Oh, yeah, no question about it. And something else that, you know, it's not – and again, it's not just last night, but last night I thought it was glaring the problems Auburn had around the rim on both ends of the court. Yeah. I mean, you know, they were not Mississippi State didn't feel like they were nearly as contested as Auburn was. I mean, I think State had 11 blocks and Auburn's 5 of 14 on layups, and Mississippi State shoots 70% on layups. You have that kind of difference, it's amazing you even have a chance to win.
Correct. Yeah, correct. Yeah, Mississippi State blocked a lot of shots. They got good rim protection. But
Auburn missed a lot of layups, too, though. I mean,
yeah, got missed layups, missed dunks, you know, all that. Like, that has been a thing that, you know, when Auburn was winning, you know, that winning streak they went on, and then you go back to, like, the St. John's game, you go back to the NC State game, you go back to, like, the Oregon game, some of these others that they've had this year, the points in the paint were a pretty big tell. Arkansas, Florida. Points in the paint were a pretty big tell for Auburn in those games. And when they don't, I mean, when you're that bad from two, it doesn't even matter that you got a good 3-point performance last night from your own team, because, you know, and they got to the free throw line, they attacked the rim. It's just you gotta have a better finishing product. I think Auburn has been way too inconsistent with finishing from 2-point range. I think last night you saw it where the end of the game, they're just running downhill into the teeth of the defense and getting nothing for it. Should they have gotten some foul calls there late? Yeah, absolutely. I think the Keyshawn Murphy putback attempt was when they're up two is a really big example of that. But, you know, you just can't keep doing that over and over again and getting no results out of it. And so I think those misses they had early in the game were, you know, put them behind the eight ball. And then late in the game, they weren't able to finish because really wasn't a game where they did a good amount of finishing around the basket.
And now the team's got to somehow, I mean, it's, and I think maybe if Mississippi State had just stayed ahead by double figures all game long, you'd have a different set of questions to ask. But to get so close and to build a lead and to have the momentum to the point where you're up seven with, you know, at the under four and shots that had been going for Mississippi State all night weren't falling for them. Shots that hadn't been going for you all night, you know, 3-pointers from Tahad and Overton suddenly are going, and you've got all the momentum. And then to have Mississippi State come back and win the game the way they did, Like, this is getting the team ready for Saturday night against Kentucky, knowing how the season will feel if Kentucky comes into Auburn and wins on Saturday night.
Yep.
This is a huge challenge for Steven and his staff over the next couple of days.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to come together. You got to find some improvement. You got to find some leadership. You got to find some guts. You got to do all that. And, you know, this team has done a good job of playing desperately, but it's no more like, oh, well, you like the margin for error is gone, right, for this team. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, we've seen it in years past where Auburn could get down and then they could rally and they could win. They could finish it off. Well, they were an older team. They were a deeper team. You know, they had, a head coach who had coached for 30 plus years on the bench. Like, you had those assets. You don't have those assets anymore. So you can't dig your holes like that. You just absolutely cannot keep living like that in these games, because if you get off to a rough start again on Saturday against Kentucky, every time you have to do this, the more and more you look around and say, okay, is this it? Is this the breaking point? Is this when everything, you know, packs it in? Because the more you lose and the more you're having to throw yourself out of the fire, the tougher it gets moving forward. And look, I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. That atmosphere in that arena is going to be pretty bad if they are get off to a rough start, because mm-hmm. people will check out. And,
you're right.
You know, it just – it has.
And the ones that don't
that
check out may voice
– in there this season.
The ones that don't check out may voice how unhappy they are with what's going on right
sure,
now.
No, but I'm just saying, they have gotten to the point this season where, like, yes, Auburn fans have not had much to cheer for at home game. Auburn has not been as good of a team at home this season. It's changed the atmosphere in that game. And it's like, okay, if you go and make some of the same mistakes, get off to the same problems and have that kind of slow start against Kentucky, you know, you're bound. I mean, you're getting closer and closer to just being like, this is done.
Yep.
Like your season is, you can hang it up now. So yeah, I mean, it's going to take some leadership. It's going to take some guts. It's going to take some coaching. It's going to take some, you know, it's going to take some nerve about you, because, you know, all the odds are stacked against you at this point. You know, you had a team that you felt like you were pretty comfortable to make the NCAA tournament and that you could handle some losses and keep on ticking, but you had to take care of business. You didn't take care of business last night. And now it's just the pressure gets even higher with every game now.
Yeah, we described the lead up to Mississippi State as you're not on the bubble, but you can see the bubble from Starkville.
Yep.
Well, you're now on the bubble, and I think you can see the end of the season from mm-hmm. Neville Arena on Saturday if the Kentucky game goes poorly. And when you talk about the margin for error, Justin, I think that's you can go back to when Auburn had home games against Alabama and Vanderbilt, and you said if you win one of those, you've got yourself.
Yeah, you've gone 3-3 in the toughest stretch of the season there.
If you win either Alabama or Vanderbilt, you've built yourself enough wiggle room to where you could lose to a non-tournament team. One, you could lose to a non-tournament team in one of those four games you play against teams that aren't projected to make it. You didn't lose those two, and now you've lost a game to a non-tournament team. I don't think you can. I think that if you go 0-2 against Alabama and Kentucky between now and the end of the season.
Look, if you lose Saturday, you can't lose again, is the way I feel. Mm-hmm. You can't lose again if you lose.
Yeah,
if you lose
Saturday. It would be interesting to see what it would look like if you lost to Kentucky and lost to Alabama, won the other three games. I think you would be very much a bubble, like,
yeah, you're 17-14. Really, I think you need a tournament win, a conference tournament win.
Best case scenario might be that you're in Dayton, Justin.
Yeah, no, and the SEC tournament doesn't really matter a ton to the selection committee because it's just one more data point, but it can help teams that are on the bubble.
Yep.
You know, and so, like, that's the thing. It's like, yes, if you go 3-2 down the stretch here, you're looking at a situation where you're going to need some help. It isn't just going to be get in on your own merits. It's like, you know, you're probably going to need to do some damage in Nashville and then hope you get into the dance.
That's right.
The bubble being weak this year helps Auburn. The fact that Auburn's strength of schedule is going to be crazy helps Auburn. The fact that they've got some good wins helps Auburn. But one of the things that you've been able to lean on is well, you've taken care of business against the teams you've had to take care of business against, and yes, you have a lot of losses, but look at who they came against. That's out the window when you lose to a team like Mississippi State.
Yeah, and if you go 3-2, you've also lost 7 of your last 10. And that's not good either.
And then you'd be at a point where, you know, you would have to have a resume. It would just depend on who else is up for it at that point, and just, you know, you hope you have enough quad one wins, you have enough, you know, wiggle room there. I think the one little thing that's going to help them out, hopefully, and look, they got to take advantage of it. Oklahoma's a quad one game. Like that road game will matter.
Justin, we're up against it. Great stuff. Can you tell folks where they can find all your work?
Yeah, auburnobserver.com. Check it out there.
Fantastic stuff, Justin Ferguson. We'll have podcasts and newsletters and a whole bunch more. Outstanding. Always great to talk with Justin.
We'll get to our final break. Back to wrap it up here on the Thursday Drive.
Hi, this is Tyler with GutterPro. At GutterPro, we believe spring is all about a fresh
7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Wrapping things up on the Thursday edition of the drive. Big thanks to our buddy Justin Ferguson for
busy day for him, and he puts out great info. Looking forward to seeing everything. We've all got subscriptions to it, so you should as well. We're out of time here on the Thursday Drive. You're back tomorrow. I'm here tomorrow. Coach Don Dunn will be in with us. If you didn't get a chance to get through today, we'd love to talk to you tomorrow. But that's going to do it for the Thursday edition of the Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.